Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
Quick podcast while I walk to buy some milk, and just a real grim time where I just talk you through experiments and designs which haven't really worked or in the process of working or not working. Now, the one that was a great hope of mine but actually didn't work was beam steering using lens arrays. So the fundamental idea is that if you have two lenses and they don't beam expand, they are positioned at a focal length from each other. Two focal lengths from each other, the focus is in the direct center. Light will come in, get inverted, and come out the other side. Now, if the lenses are displaced a certain quantity, it will move, deflect the light. So if the lens, if one lens is shifted with respect to the other, the effect will be that the light will come out at an angle. It's a fairly simple piece of optics. Now, if you can steer one piece of light with it, and if you have a huge lens array, you should be able to steer light quite well. And the issue is that these lens arrays are fiendishly expensive to buy. And I had tracked what I thought was a cheap source of lens arrays, and this printing company which prints this plastic, and they ship me out, and indeed what they sent me was not a lens array, but it was a cylindrical lens array. So you'd test the idea out in at least one dimension. And so essentially, I can't quite work out why it doesn't work at all. There is a sort of an angle. It does work a little bit, but it's really not a going concern. And the most I can get out of it is that you put a laser beam into this and it produces a fanning of the laser beam out into a fairly, produces a fairly angular top hat use, and then you can put two of them in two dimensions together and get basically a fairly uniform square of laser light out. Now, really there's not, you know, diffraction patterns, diffraction gratings do a better job than that. So I'm really scratching my head to work out a better way of doing it. So the overall idea is that you can use these flat arrays and microcontrollers, minimal controllers, to radically steer light. And so these are flat glass plates, and so you can mount them so they're not affected by wind or things like that. And they can really work rather well. But the prototypes which I got in haven't worked. So that's one thing that hasn't worked. And I suppose the next thing which hasn't worked after I've tried, I'm sort of getting closer and closer to it. And this is the Internet of Things beaker. And so that's one idea, sort of fallen flat on its face. Still really, really trying to sort of work my way in the top and sort of come down and actually get a solar solution, which is a bit innovative, a bit more far-fetched than what's currently available. And so I'm looking at, I've been asked to see if I can design a solar oven. Can I produce something which is actually a generation, a step ahead? That is a glass array which steers light beams in, and way of monitoring a thermal pond that the, in terms of entropy and heat, you get the maximum amount of heat out of it, or the heat transfer is mostly to your liquid in the most efficient way. And So you have the maximum, your cold water is coming in and you need hot water coming out. And the coldest water cools the coolest part, and that heats it up the water a little bit. So there's the process of doing it. So I've done some calculations and I can work out doing that. So there's two ways going forward. So I've got this chap coming up to me. He must think I'm absolutely mad. I have to go out and do it. The other thing that I was doing was looking at the Internet of Things beaker. G'day, mate. Oh, you didn't speak anyway, so it must be pretty angry. Okay. Yeah, the Internet of Things beaker. And I've sort of worked out how to wire this thing up through data lines, and I've slowly plugged my way up and just eliminated error after error after error. So slowly, but still hasn't worked. It's one, I've got the libraries up. So there's sort of two paths to program these, ESP8266 chips. They look, they're getting on to be 5, 10 years old. I wouldn't say they're quite 10 years old. They're yesterday's technology, but they're sort of coming up, and they're, you know, what you would use now. There's probably new things coming along, but they're a very small chip, and they can sit there and they can basically store a bit of information, be programmable by serial port, and they can sort of sit with a whole lot of peripherals. One's a battery power, another thing is a USB line, another thing is a Wi-Fi line. So it's basically, we've got all the plugs to plug into my Internet of Things plug. And then I've arranged it to have a, what is it, a USB, it's not a USB, lines in. So I've got my first series of sensors up, and it hasn't been working. So it's taken a little while to work out how to put the chip. The chip has its data and clock line on it, so you just have to work out how to put that in. That's, and I've hooked that across. You've got to make sure your serial port's reading the baud rate that you instruct it. And that's there. And then you've just got to systematically download all the relevant libraries. And after an hour or so mucking around, I've got the relevant libraries and it's working. And on a multiple one, now what happens is it now goes out and hunts for detectors. So now the big question, I don't have. So you buy little modules the size of 5-cent coins, basically Australian 5-cent coins. Put them in. And somehow, how do you actually set the IC squared address? I really don't know how that happens. I really, seriously don't know how. But it can detect two addresses. I wonder if the actual sensor can actually detect there's another sensor on the line and then change its address. I wonder if that's how it does, because they're identical chips, or you can put in identical chips. So I'm just going to have to stop at this moment and get going and see if I've actually been recording. I have been doing this time. Okay, the long and short of it, see if I'm recording. Yeah, I am. Look, the long and short of it is that there's two methods. One's with the Arduino library method. And the Arduino library method has all the chip suppliers writing code for you, so there's really nothing to do except it's really poorly documented. And I can say it's poorly documented from a teacher's point of view, I could put a flow chart. You know, they've got a series of steps. It's really just got to go a flow chart. Questions: is it, are you doing this or that, A or B? In fact, you could write an app to direct yourself through it. So it looks as though I've got to produce a summon up a 4.7 kilo ohm resistor in the process of all this, so you can hear the traffic noise as I'm walking along. And all of this, so there's sort of two routes to go. One is the Python route, and the Python route doesn't really get you anywhere. As opposed to the Arduino. So Arduino, that's how you pronounce it, is C++, and that's pretty bulk standard. So I suppose C++ is a little bit sort of like a cross between BASIC and Fortran. It all mixes together. It's all it's sort of strange because the actual components in C++ is object-oriented concepts. So if you wanted to do, it's sort of very similar to Rapid robotics programming. The Rapid is the code that you. Is a sort of C++ for robots, and it's sort of the main concept, dot a refinement, dot refer refinement, dot refine a refinement. So you've got your object, and you can actually define it. So the object's not a physical object, it's a theoretical object. So what it looks to be that I've got it going so far. Hassle these poor people saying, look, I can't do it. I'll try and send bits of documentation off, and then I work a little while and get it going. But it looks as though I've got to get a 4.7K pull-down resistor to get the data lines up and running. It's rather hard to get these things done because you don't have anyone around you working on it. In fact, my soldering iron blew up, and I then looked around for a mate who had a soldering iron. You get a real sense of isolation when none of your friends have anything approaching a soldering iron, or if they do, it's not been used. It's sort of... it's really rather depressing, in actual fact. So that's the limit of failure. Yeah, so this is essentially what I'm doing with all these projects. The projects are basically, all research is really successful recovery or exploitation of failures. So look, you know, I might be a 4.7 kilo ohm resistor away from success. Just really trying to think if I've got. I really don't have at hand resistors, and it's sort of really amazing that this entire situation. That at the end of it, it's all miniaturized. Resistor, every component is really a spot less than a full stop or something like that. They're getting really, really small to handle. And at the end of it, you've got this old world resistor scene. It's like, you've got a Panzer tank and it needs a Gothic mace, to work. But essentially, we'll go in it. The other area of failure, well, it's not really a failure, is glenbrookinstitute.org. You know, that's, you know, you sort of say, oh, I did that to get some samples for me, and the samples I did get in eventually, they didn't work. And Glenbrook Org, or Glenbrook Institute, Org is also in itself a failure again, because I can't get the there are all websites there, but it's really interesting in terms of that I contact a number of people and get very few replies for it. That is, I've got following sort of instinct on getting, I've got all, everyone in as directors, all my mates as directors in it, but I've been, I can't sort of digitally enhance them. There's one friend who I've digitally enhanced, and I've put him in a, what is it, Ghibli Studio background. I was trying to think, there's Totoro and various things. I really want to watch the Ghibli Studio stuff again, because we've got that childlike extension of the boundaries, where you go and discover things, and there's you have relationships with creatures, a childlike relationship with these things which are frightening, which is rather interesting, because this is perhaps what's happened to me with quantum mechanics and things like that. These ideas, and I speak to people, and they're it's not just quantum mechanics, it's a whole piece of other ideas. And they find them frightening, but if you have a sort of a childlike relationship and of truth, it actually is quite interesting. So getting this set up, I've seen automatically that if it's on a mobile phone, it's going to have basically a jewel-like three-dimensional look to it. So it's got to look as though there's some depth in there. And that's not done with social electronics, that's done with special using your phone's accelerometer, such that you can tilt your phone and see some depth, but not a huge amount of depth. And it's just enough to pick it up and have a look at it. And where that's fallen apart, it's beyond me. I can't get the I can get things at different layers, but at different screen sizes, they've got different scales, and so the parallax command, which I give it to, so it looks three-dimensional, wipes that out, and I've still gone on circles for an hour or two. Just nothing working. But I suppose it's a good thing, and well, because it's made me fix a few things up. You know, going through it several times, looking for errors. And this is a general thing. I have to look forward to another way of producing all of these things. So it's just a rather depressing error thing. It's been raining. I haven't been able to, obviously I've been inside working so hard, I haven't neglected my health in terms of, I don't know, just working out and pushing out. I suppose I should be doing a big thing on the exercise bike, but unfortunately my wife's people will be wanting to go to bed, so I can't really do that. So it's really difficult to work out where to go, because you just reach, you're working on certain projects, and when they all fail, well, they haven't really failed, but they've all stalled at the same time, you feel overall stalled yourself, which is just the way it is. So I'll keep on pushing it. And the I suppose the difference between I suppose, people in industry or a job working. I've really got nowhere to fall. If you fall over, no one will pick you up. You've got to have the energy as you fall over in your mind, the energy that I might be over, but I've got to pick myself up and dust myself off. So I'm completed that task, and I'll back into my house, just working away. I'll just pull this out and switch you off. Thanks a lot for listening. I'll keep on pushing along.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.